Well, joining us for his regular chat, and that is Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, it's bright and early today, isn't it?
It is. Setting the scene for people, we are recording this at, it's 20 past 6 UK time and 20 past 7, of course, Monaco time.
I had a lion come over you. Sorry about that. Got a big meeting at 10:30 and with the hour time difference, this is the only time we can arrange it, so thank you for...
No problem at all, KB. Always a pleasure. Let's start with Leeds United then, because never a dull week. And, the chief executive, Matt Child, has left this week. More rumourings about ownership. But let's start with Matt Child and what this means for Neil Redfern, because I suppose quite a lot of people were surprised about Matt Child leaving, but it also leaves Neil Redfern's future sort of up in the air again.
Well, as I understand it, Child, nobody knows very much about him. He had no previous experience with football. He was the former chief executive of Phone for You when they went bust. But he was a Leeds fan, apparently, and persuaded Massimo to give him the job. They're not very communicative. He didn't want to talk to us when we attended one of the press conferences when he was introduced. And I gather you had a little experience of him on a different occasion. But the stories I've heard, what little I've heard, is that one was very positive, that he'd started rebuilding all the team spirit, morale among the staff after Patel's dreadful performance and terror of destruction. And some of the staff are sorry to see him go because they're now back in limbo. And that's about it. But as you say, it does leave the question of, is where now we haven't got a chief executive, the question of who's going to make a decision over Redfern. Because, of course, by this time, the manager, whoever he is, should be widely canvassing for next season's team and players and planning. And, of course, it's hard to see that being done in the present environment because nobody knows who's in charge, what the budgets are, and what the hell's going on. So it's unfortunate. It increases and extends the rate of uncertainty. But meanwhile, of course, another point in a very difficult situation at Blackpool last Saturday enables us to keep moving up the table, albeit slowly.
Talk of ownership comes up again, KB, and
I feel Genting have very quickly dismissed the...
That's right. Yeah, they've dismissed any talk of a possible bid. But Russell Crowe, the gladiator himself, continues to state his interest. I mean, a number of different TV and radio programmes he's been on, being very vociferous about his support for Leeds United and his hope at some point to maybe buy the club.
You have to take these with a pinch of salt, of course, because... First of all, without me being too cynical, remember he's just about launched a new film, and usually all these earth-shaking revelations come out when a pop star is promoting a new record, or somebody promoting a new film, or somebody's promoting a new tour. But let's look at the logistics. He lives in Los Angeles, and being a film star is, if you're a successful one, you make it quite hard work. So the logistics is he's based 6,000 miles away. And it's one thing to say you support a club. I believe there are loads of people in China that support me, but not quite sure. I haven't actually ever been to the game. Or, in fact, put any money in the club. That's the first thing. Secondly, Russell Crowe, we don't know how much money he's got. Presumably, he's got more than the more than GFH. No, money, that wouldn't be easy. You probably got more money than GFH. Don't quite know from a logistical point of view. Howard Rye Club, likely, there's a big club. High expectations. And a demanding supporters. Someone demanding supporters who are actually in the area and go and watch the club. So I don't think it can be a millionaire's plaything. Has he ever seen Leeds play? I don't know. But I see the last film movie I saw, he was at another gamer's professor's interest in Leeds. But yeah, we've had them all before, haven't we? They all come and go. He spoke well, mind you, but I remain sceptical. On the other hand, the executive chair, Mr. Umbers, has stated categorically that Leeds is not for sale. And Mr. Tolino has no intention of selling. And if we can quote him, he said, the club is not for sale, nor Tolino family want to sell, so he said in the approach contrary to his report in the press. The club being successfully restructured, rebuilt, significantly invested in, care and planning for the long term, etc., 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 etc. So that I wouldn't get excited in your beer at the possible Mr. Crowe arriving. If he does, I would regard it as a bonus rather than expectation. As I said, we've seen them all before. Including Duncan Revy, if you remember. It's easy to make a speech and catch headlines. It's another thing to actually do all the hard work involved in looking into a business, particularly a football club, and successfully negotiate a happy situation and conclusion. So, as I said, don't hold your breath. Let's move on with the affairs of football and Leeds United.
Well, it's moving on then to other stories, KB. And FIFA's always an interesting subject at the best of times. Some interesting news this week. David Gill, the ex-Manchester United chief exec, has won UEFA's vote to be Britain's next FIFA vice president. And then we've also had a story coming out this week that England could be interested in bidding for the 2026 World Cup. I wonder if we can get your thoughts on both of those news stories this week.
Well, I've known David Gill from the moment he entered into football, and I have a high respect and regard for him. He's a very good, logical man, hard-working, and he's very, honourable, matter-of-fact, feet on the ground. In fact, Martin Edwards once said his biggest mistake he ever made was giving the chief executive job at Manchester United to Peter Kenyon rather than David Gill. So it's a privilege to have watched him and known him. He's come up basically through the ranks and became chief executive of Leeds, United, being a director. Then he went on the FA board. He's a significant representative of the Premier League. And now he's got the UEFA vice president's job, and good for him. He will bring an honest, I'm going to use that word advisedly, honest presence to the inner workings of FIFA. But however, he'll be able to have a, how much progress he'll be able to make, and difference he'll be able to make, as long as Blatter is around, I do not know. But one thing is for sure, he will press for openness, honesty and disclosure. And I can't see him being shut up by Blatter. Blatherings. I wish him well. And the future looks a little bit brighter. The future of world football. And the restoration of long lost integrity and honesty. batter. Cause continues to hang on to power. They reckon he's bought enough votes to make sure he's re-elected already. The interesting thing is, when he was elected last time, he did so when he stated categorically it was his last term time, and then he was going to sort of step back, younger man. And I think he got quite a few votes on that basis. Okay, one more shot, then we're rid of him. And he said it again. He's 79, so the next election will be 83. Mind you, nothing being 83 in itself, of course. It's not a bad age to be when you get there. If you get there, make it, said he, being 83. But whether he's got any dynamism left, or I think his main thing now is self-preservation. The trouble is, he's got a dilemma because he stepped down, the new guy comes in. It's your Blatter, of course. And who knows what will come out from the behind the woodwork. Because all boxes will be open, all files will be revealed, and people will be anxious to prove themselves they are different to him. As long as he's there, I'm afraid that not much change will be made in football from an honesty point of view. And of course the next thing comes up is the idea of us being England, bidding for 2026. You know, I'm not even sure whether it's worth bidding for. There's great excitement nationally, but if you look at the history of World Cups, it costs the host nation hundreds of millions of pounds. I've commented on before that FIFA took $1 billion out of South Africa. They took enough money out of South Africa to rebuild and rehouse all the black town people living, poor black people living in the townships on the road from Cape Town Airport to Cape Town City Centre. It doesn't do much for the country it leaves behind. And meanwhile, there's tremendous disruption and displacement in the host country. And the host country stumps up. That's all great for tourism. You've got to sell a lot of hotel bedrooms and McDonald's and KFCs to recover that outgoing investment. So I've been trying to say, look, let me get on with it. That's my considered opinion on that one.
Well, if we can get your considered opinion as well, KB, on Greg Dyke, the FA chairman, has warned Premier League football is in danger of having nothing to do with English people. He's got new proposals to limit the number of non-EU players that are playing in the Premier League. It's also revealed plans to toughen the rules on homegrown talent in these new proposals. I wonder if we can get your thoughts on that, KB.
Well, these restrictions are ones that I have been advocating for some time. It certainly goes a long way to Waldrop. If we go right back to the beginning, don't forget, we've been looking at this problem of the growth of homegrown English players for some time. Now, I've been pointing out that since it's funded by the English FA, then the academies run by clubs should be actually be for English players, not Scottish players, Irish players or Welsh players, if you take that argument to its logical conclusion. However, that might be a bit too extreme for some people. Let's say, okay, we're talking about British players, and I think the academy should be limited to British-born players, or ones that come in at the age of 3 or 4, something like that. But certainly, what the situation at the moment is one that militates against the development of English youth. I'll give you a small example. Some of the Premiership clubs have huge people on their books, huge numbers of people on their books. And that stifles their development because you can, at the end of the day, you can only play, say, 4 teams, 5 teams. There's 60, 80 players at the best, including the kids. you take Chelsea, for example, I think they have, at the moment, more players out on loan than they have playing in the training at Cobham. And the most extreme example, of course, is the three kids they stole from us, Leeds, when the academy guy went and got a job at Chelsea. Took the three kids with them, I can't even remember their names now. And because, of course, they did an illegal thing, they had to settle it. Didn't want the publicity of the High Court, which we threatened them with. They paid us £4.5 million, which is okay for us, but bad for the kids, because they spent the entire time being loaned out and then just let go. I think all three now just left the game, petered out. I know at last season one ended his career at Carlisle. Another one was down in somewhere like Torquay or Swindon, Yeovil. Third one I can't even remember. Those kids had their careers destroyed. No doubt their mum got a new, you know, their parents got a new car or a new kitchen or something, and a couple of trips down to London. But it destroys the kids' careers. So they need football, they need consistent football, they need teamwork football in the same atmosphere, not being shunted from one two-bob club to another in their so-called process. That's the first thing. But secondly, they have to cut down the number of foreigners to give the English kids a chance. And this, and Dyke's idea of restricting the number of youngsters here, or the number of non-English players there, is good. But the important thing all will be to restrict the absolute numbers that clubs can register, of players that clubs can register. Because that would then leave players who have no chance of ultimate progress at Chelsea, Manchester City, etc., of going and finding their career at a lower level, if they're good enough, coming through. And the other thing I would seriously consider is the loan players system between the Premiership and the Football League. Because so many clubs sign players and promptly put them out on loan. Now, that also damages the ambitions of the league clubs and the growth of their own homegrown players. It's like a waterfall. These things have an effect further and further down as they flow. So, for example, Rotherham, instead of relying on loans, they should have their own teams. Kids coming through from the Rotherham area or the Greater Yorkshire area. Fans want to see their own heroes more than imports. I mean, the great Leeds team under Revy and Wilkinson as homegrown heroes. And if you look at the current one under Redfern, he's coming on well. Got Byron, Taylor, Moffat, Cairns, Cook. Looking good. That's because we've got a good academy and because Leeds got a big reputation. We attract the kids, but we're keeping them. Well, we have been. We are doing. That could be replicated throughout the country. There'll be a renaissance of English football. With maybe a bit more go in it, rather than just holding the ball and knocking about a bit. No, I applaud Greg Dyke, and I think that the Premiership clubs, unfortunately many of whom are now foreign owned, should think carefully about it, because if they can have the ultimate sanction, they do hold what people don't know, is not generally known is when the Premier League was set up, there were 20 clubs and each of whom got one vote. But the 21st vote is the golden vote held by the FA. Although they've never used it, it it could be used to veto any premiership decisions if it was thought necessary to do so in the interest of the national game. And of course they have the ultimate sanction refusing to nominate English clubs playing in Europe. So Premiership, I think, should think very carefully about the FA's proposals, because they may not be perfect, but they're stepping in the right direction. And there's no reason why England should be a breeding nation in other countries around the world. So I hope these proposals and ideas given very serious consideration and adopted in some form or the other.
Well, finally, KB, let's talk about one of Leeds United's greatest fans, which is Ian English, who won the Skybet Fan of the Month competition. And he's also going to be a guest of ours at the VIP box at the Blackburn game.
Yes, I mean, Ian English is an amazing man. He's wheelchair-bound. He has cerebral palsy. And he uses his right arm and leg. Apparently makes accurate predictions for United during the February matches. Maybe we should try and help him raise funds for the club by getting him to bet on our results. So far he's been successful and we've been positive. Yes, he's a fantastic man. Delighted that he supported us home and away for 22 years. Barely misses a game. When we heard about him, he just joined a train to London to watch us beat Fulham. So very, very well done to him. But he's also an example to other disabled people. And whoever your misfortune, and some people are very unlucky, you can sit on your bum and moan, feel sorry for yourself. You can get out, get on with your life, make the best of it. He's done that. He's a great example to other people. So congratulations on winning the Skybet Fan of the Month. And as you say, we'll be delighted that you're going to host the game for us, the Blackburn game, which he will enjoy in the lofty, from the lofty heights of the fourth floor of our lovely refurbished East End. So congratulations. I hope you have a great time. And of course you can join. Everybody else has a chance to join in voting a competition, which you're now going to tell people about.
Indeed I will. Yes, if you want to win VIP tickets to see Leeds United against Blackburn, then you just need to answer this following question. Which of the following players have played professionally for Leeds United, Blackburn Rovers and Newcastle United? Is it A, Gary Kelly, B, David Batty, or C, Eric Cantona? For your chance to win, just text YORKS to 84383. That's YORKS to 84383, followed by either A, B, or C. Text costs £1 plus standard message rate. For full terms and conditions, visit radioyorkshire.co.uk. KB, once again, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Hang on. You're forgetting the Grand Prix.
Oh, indeed I am. Tell us a little bit about what the Grand Prix weekend's like in Monaco, KB.
It's like one of the old Wakes weeks, if older listeners can remember. When everything comes to a stop and turns into one long week-long carnival. Everything is disrupted. Buses are diverted, cars aren't allowed in, and the hordes pour in. It's a great excitement. It's a fantastic experience for everybody, from the multimillionaires floating on their yachts, anchored opposite the finishing line, to all the street cafes and bars and shops and the fun fair and everything you can think of. It's just one great party, and a few English touches. There's the very well-known Irish pub where people can get at this Fleshman's Bar, just above the port. And of course, there's the car racing. If you're a motor car enthusiast or racing enthusiast, well, Monaco is the ultimate, because since they race around the streets, unlike, you know, when you're in a race course like Silverstone and that sort of thing, you can always see the whites of the eyes of the drivers, and you get close up with the supporters and backup teams of the various racing empires like Ferrari, Mercedes and McLaren. And this, what we have is for two lucky people. We have two seats on the Saturday and on the Sunday. What's the semi-final and the final. And be a great weekend. And everybody can plan their own travel arrangements, because some wish just to go down, watch the race and get out. Others may wish to make it part of a 10-day or 14-day touring holiday. We might want to extend their stay for a few days to watch the build-up to the final. And what is also amazing, they're very professional, dismantling all the stands and the crash barrier afterwards. It's a very professional operation and one to be admired. So it's something for everybody. All you have to do is to compete in another competition, which will run until the middle of May. So the weekend is the 24th of May, and so it's plenty of time to plan how you want to get to Monte Carlo and what you want to make of the fantastic event. I have to tell you, one of the places that I always used to go and watch in the old days was the Rascas, where there's a 270-degree turn around this really famous old restaurant. And of course, because of that, the cars have to really slow down. You can almost look into their eyes and see them, instead of when they're doing 140, 50 miles an hour. It's a fantastic experience. And the good news is you won't meet me, because I should be in Portofino. And Suzanne and I get out and leave it to the happy people coming in. So, over to you.
Thanks, KB. Okay, if you want to be there and win tickets to the Monaco Grand Prix for not just the qualifying session, but the main event itself, who is the reigning Formula One world champion? Is it A, Jenson Button? Is it B, Lewis Hamilton? Or is it C, Sebastian Vettel? Text DAB to 84383, followed by A, B or C. Your text costs £1 plus one standard message rate. And again, full terms and conditions, you can visit radioyorkshire.co.uk. I think we've covered everything, KB, for another week. Thanks very much for your time.
And indeed, all we have to say is, looking forward to Saturday and 3 points.